Hey, this is Mike Evans. Listen to every episode of Schlereth and Evans on demand at denverfan.com. Presented by Siltahar Motors. The car buying experience is as easy as call, click, or come in at Siltahar Motors. Get upfront trade value with one call. Research and compare vehicles at sthmotors.com. Or come in and ask for Greg Larson and get $500 off any purchase. Siltahar Motors. Easy to find and conveniently located right off Highway 36 in Wadsworth. Siltahar Motors. Get everything you want out of a dealership.
Ladies and gentlemen, can I please have your attention? I've just been handed an urgent and horrifying news story.
Time now for the DenverFan.com front page.
Stop what you're doing and listen.
Taking a look at the top stories in Denver sports, taken from your online home for the best opinions and information on the Broncos, Nuggets, Avalanche, Rockies, and more.
What in the name of Dan Issel?
With today's DenverFan.com front page, here's Schlereth and Evans.
News team, assist!
All right. First of all, good morning, Orlando Franklin. This is like a hockey shift. Thank you for joining in.
Yeah, absolutely. No problem.
How you doing?
We understand once the season comes, Mark Schlereth has to be spread thin here at the station because he has to do a lot of traveling.
East Coast especially,
yeah,
man.
He has to sit in his house naked until 8 a.m. and do radio and then get dressed to go travel.
Yeah, how's that? How's that for an image? That's what everybody wants to be thinking about right now. We jump into the top stories at DenverFan.com, the front page, and we start with Nathaniel Hackett admitting that he's still learning to think like a head coach and not an offensive coordinator, as written by Will Peterson. Is there something to that? The idea that coordinators, maybe offensive coordinators even more than defensive coordinators, struggle because there's a much different mindset when you're calling plays as an OC as compared to calling plays while you're also the head coach.
I think you struggle because of your preparation, right? As an OC, as soon as that offensive series is done, now you start thinking and you start making adjustments, but you're in real time, right? So that your offense just jogged off to the sideline. Hey, we're making corrections, but now you're looking at that play calling sheet. This is where I'm going. This is where I'm going next. This is how I'm setting up. This is the chess match that I want to play. But now that you're a head coach, you can't do that because as soon as the offense comes on the field, off the field, the defense is now out there on the field. And now you have to be involved with the defense. And then you got to cut over the microphone and jump on the defense. Listen to what Ezra Evero's calling on defense. And watch those personnel groupings and make sure that you can communicate with your defensive coordinator. So I think that's what he means by it. It's just a little bit more as far as when the offense comes off the field. Now he has a lot more on his plate where before he could just start like making adjustments later on.
And I think part of that is also when you're an offensive coordinator, you tend to think more just about the reward. The reward, and how this play and these plays can work. Whereas then you become a head coach, you probably start to factor more of the risk into that reward. You start thinking about, well, if we don't get it, what's this going to do for special teams? What's this going to do for field position? What's this going to do for our defense? I would think you think more about those things as a head coach than you would as an offensive coordinator. Yes, no?
Yes, because there's a person that's chiming in on your ear, right? We saw it this past week. Bronco Country didn't love the fact that the Broncos couldn't make decisions as fast as they should. They didn't love the fact that play clock was going down. And a lot of that is Nathaniel Hackett thinking as an offensive coordinator, I want to go for it. I want to go for it right now, so I'm going to leave my offense out there. Then all of a sudden, you got an analytic guy that jumps in and says, hey, you know, statistically, you shouldn't do this right here. And then it's, oh, my goodness, yeah, but I really want to go for it because I'm an offensive coordinator. But, oh, I got to wear my head coaching hat now. What does this do for the defense if I go for it right here? And how bad does that mess us up because the analytic guy just got jumped in my ear? And, oh, okay, let's kick it. So switch. And all of a sudden you see the delay of game penalties or you see Nathaniel Hackett having a bird of timeout.
Cecil Lammy shares his three keys to the game. And I'm really interested to get your thoughts this hour on San Francisco because you were with the 49ers coaching last year, so you've got great insight into
their my keys,
how they operate.
Cecil's keys are my keys.
Are they the same?
I sat with Cecil on Wednesday.
Okay.
He was like, I can't wait to hear what your keys are to the game because I'm going to write about them.
Okay.
And he wrote about them.
All right, so the first one was let Jimmy be. Not Jimmy G, Jimmy B. Let Jimmy be, meaning don't necessarily go out and do a lot of exotic things to confuse Jimmy Garoppolo, because one thing you know about Jimmy Garoppolo, he's going to give you at least two or three opportunities to pick off a pass during a game.
Yeah.
Agree?
Yes, sir. You will be able to get pressure on Jimmy Garoppolo with the four guys up front. You need to attack the left guard, the center, the right guard, the right tackle. Trent Williams is a man out there. But everybody else, you can expose those guys. And now let Jimmy Garoppolo be, because when you don't bring pressure, he will throw it to you a couple times in the game, because he will just say, hey, I can make that throw. I can curve that football. So what Cecil's talking about, let him be. Let him go out there and throw those opportunities, but make sure that you come down with them and steal a possession for the Broncos.
It goes without saying, you go up against San Francisco, you got to be worried about their running game. Easier said than done, right? This is, in Mark's words, the best running game in the NFL, the one that all the other NFL teams study and try to emulate.
Yes. You have to watch the ball this week. All 11 guys on defense, you need to watch the ball. San Francisco does a lot of different things where they bring guys back. So what that looks like, Mike, is they want full flow one way, but now they're going to bring either a tight end back, and the tight end's going to go kick out the defensive end. And the reason why they do that is to hold the linebacker's eyes. Because if they can get you to stop your feet for 1 second, it's going to put the offensive line in better position to block you. It's going to put the running back in better position to expose you. So it's all about watching the ball. Like literally, if I'm a linebacker this week, I am looking at the center, put the ball between his legs, give it to Jimmy Garoppolo. I'm looking at Jimmy Garoppolo, what he does with that ball. I'm not looking at the guys that are going back, because San Francisco will send one guy back, then they'll send two guys back, then they'll even send three guys back. And all it is, it's window dressing to get the linebackers to look at, oh my goodness, look how many people are going this way. We have to go this way. We have to go back, because they just sent three people back, and all of a sudden you have the running back going for 30 out the front door. So key the football.
One more key from Cecil/Orlando. No more dumb penalties. The Broncos has been well documented this week. 25 penalties through the first 2 weeks, the most ever in a two-game back-to-back span for the Broncos in team history. When you're getting penalized that much as a team, that is a reflection of what?
Coaching staff. It is truly a reflection of the coaching staff. Not only has this team got dumb penalties, the coaches have allowed you to get dumb penalties as well. And I really believe that it's a two-step phase when it comes to dumb penalties. It's going to take Nathaniel Hackett to clean up the operational side of things. And then now Nathaniel Hackett could really start beating it in these guys' heads and getting after these guys. And now having the team change how they have went about things. Because right now, if you're Nathaniel Hackett, you start trying to be rough on penalties, players are looking at you and be like, coach, didn't you get us a bunch of penalties too? Haven't you hurt this football team as well? What are you talking about? You're talking about both sides of your mouth. So it's going to take Nathaniel Hackett to go out there and clean up his operational penalties, and hopefully he cleans that up this week. But I still anticipate the Broncos, the football team, getting penalties. But hopefully next week, you know, we could really cut it down, because, you know, we saw Nathaniel Hackett this week take a step forward, and the team takes a step forward next week.
Another one of your partners, John Davis, writing at DenverFan.com. How this game represents a tipping point for Nathaniel Hackett, that we are already at a tipping point. John Davis writes, quote, an embarrassing loss to the 49ers could be the final verdict in the eyes of Broncos country for Hackett. If Kyle Shanahan coaches circles around Hackett, faith could be lost forever.
Forever. Well, I don't think it's forever.
He uses words like forever and final.
Yeah, I don't think it's forever, because you have 14 more games. But this is going to be a big tell. This defense knows how to go up against this offense better than Nathaniel Hackett knows how to call this offense. Because this offense is a first-time thing here with the Denver Broncos. This offense has been implemented for the last 5-plus years in San Francisco. So these defensive players, they see this every single day. So in theory, it is teed up for San Francisco. But Nathaniel Hackett, that's where that chess mind has to come in. And it's you against D'Amico Ryans. And how do you expose D'Amico Ryans? How do you get in the end zone? How do you keep this thing close? How do you give your opportunity to win? Or how do you even come out and upset the world and shock the world and come out with a win? So it's a lot of things that go into it. But I don't think anything is final because there's still 14 more games. And he's going to get to coach out the rest of the season. It's not like Nathaniel Hackett's been here for 2 years already. It's been going bad. And now, hey, if you go out there and get embarrassed on Sunday night TV, it might be the final straw. This is week three.
But this will tell us a lot about this coaching staff. Because here's why. Is when you had what happened in the Seattle game, I think internally you can sort of pass that off to, wow, that was unique. There was no other team, road team, week one of the NFL who walked into that kind of environment. So you kind of maybe dismiss it as a one-off. You come home, you're playing a Houston team. Let's face it. Certainly every one of us here at The Fan thought that this was going to be a get-right game. Instead, it ended up being a much closer game. And we know what happened. The crowd's booing in the first quarter. The crowd's chanting down the play clock. That is going to be an impatient crowd right from the first whistle on Sunday. And it's a nationally televised game. The whole country's tuning in. And man, if it's another clown show and you got your own crowd booing you and chanting down the play clock and all that stuff, what's the rest of the nation's takeaway going to be? So there is room for huge embarrassment on Sunday night. I would hope that is the kind of motivating force that will get these guys to where they need to be and figure things out, because the alternative is just, well, it's too embarrassing to contemplate.
Absolutely. You know, thinking about just what happened to these guys in Seattle, right? You lose the game right at the end right there. Then you follow it up with the performance against the Houston Texans, and you see what your fan base did. You see that your fan base is very impatient. It's not like the years before, especially because of what you did this past offseason.
Yeah.
So now when you get ready to go against San Francisco could eliminate what you do really, really well. Right, the Broncos have had a narrative the last couple weeks, right? First week, oh, we went for a long kick. We thought McManus had the leg. Last week, all of a sudden, Russell Wilson's talking this during the week about how many different times they've been down there, and he's trying to make it, oh, we're basically this close, Mike. We're so close. But San Francisco's defense right now is one of the top five defenses in the league. So if they come out here on Sunday night and don't allow you to move the ball, and now all of a sudden the three and outs start showing up, this fan base will turn on you very quick on national TV while the whole world's watching.
And from that standpoint, I get where John Davis is going with the whole tipping point type thing, because it could, not final and forever, little strong there, but you're talking about digging a hole with Broncos country that's going to take a long time to dig out of. One more I want to get to. Jake Shapiro at DenverFan.com writing about how the motivated Avalanche are talking about why they can do it all over again. And as you look at it, training camp started yesterday. Is that crazy?
Yes.
Doesn't it just feel like yesterday that they were shotgunning beers along the parade route? And now here they are in day one of training camp already?
I don't know how they did it. It seems like everybody gets one turn with it. Everybody gets a day with the Stanley Cup, and then we'll see you back at training camp.
Exactly. All right, here we go. How confident are you in their ability to repeat? What do you think will be their greatest strength in being able to repeat?
I think the greatest strength is always going to be the core. And also what they did last year. They proved to themselves finally, they got over the hump finally and said, hey, we're going to play our style of hockey. The hockey gods will reward us if we just continue to get shots on net. We continue to skate fast and all gas, no brakes. And I really believe that philosophy for the Avs is not going to be something that's dismantled this year. You know, in the National Football League, whenever we see a team have success, everybody now is trying to, in the offseason, they're trying to figure out how do you, like, debunkle that? How do you discredit it? How do you break that thing apart? How do you make sure that doesn't happen anymore? In the NHL, it's a little bit harder when you just have guys that are more athletic.
Yeah.
You just have guys that have said, the heck with trying to change my style of hockey because it's playoffs. We could win this way.
Right.
And when you have the Avalanche, where it's a destination place and people are coming here to try to win Stanley Cups, but also you're able to keep guys like Josh Manson that you thought you were going to lose in free agency for him to go back to San Jose, you think he was going to take like a pay cut to go there. For him to stay here, it's special here.
And
they believe in this thing. So that's why I truly believe that this team could repeat. And Alexander Georgiev, I do believe that he's an upgrade over Darcy Kuemper.
There's no denying the talent. I just think that there's just so much power that comes with the knowledge of knowing now what it takes. And you think about this team in the playoffs last year, and even though this was a team that was absolutely on a mission, determined from the start of last training camp to get to the Cup, you know, they admitted it afterwards. There were some doubts. There were some demons in the back of their mind that they had to get rid of about getting past the second round and everything. And now that they've done it, they know what it's like. They know what it looks like. They know what it takes. And, man, that's powerful stuff, because they're one of the few teams out there that actually know what it takes. Now put it with their talent, their core. Whew.
And they did it their way.
Yeah, I'm not going to discount them at all.
They didn't have to do it the traditional way, where now you get into playoffs and we're going to play tough defense and we're going to cross-check.
Yep.
We're going to be physical. So the heck with that. We tried that against Dallas.
We'll win against
Vegas.
We'll win whatever it takes.
And that had us an early vacation.
Yep. They kept talking about that. I know Landeskog was talking about that all the time during the playoff run. Is that, hey, look, you want to play this way? Fine. We'll play that way. You want to play this way? Fine. We'll play this way. And we'll beat you no matter which way you want to play. And they did. All right, good stuff there at DenverFan.com, the front page. You can check it out. All kinds of great content constantly being added to throughout the course of the day. And as always, it is free to you. We're going to have Andrew Mason join us coming up at 8:30. I was really looking forward to you staying in this hour because of your time spent with San Francisco. And, man, when you talk about looking at this matchup, breaking it down, and really trying to get a handle on what San Francisco can bring, nobody better equipped, because you were right there in the middle of all of it. I think the thing that I'm most curious about is the Jimmy Garoppolo influence. And it's real. All you have to do is look at the Vegas line. It totally flipped from the Broncos going from like a 2-point favorite to a 1 to 2-point underdog simply with the news that Trey Lance was out and Jimmy Garoppolo was in. So as somebody that was around that team last year with Jimmy as the main guy, why is this guy so important?
He's so important because Jimmy's ability to read coverages faster, it's going to be faster than Trey Lance's. Kyle and his staff do a phenomenal job of not giving the quarterback a lot of options. Hey, here's the play. On this play, you have a 1-2 read versus zone. So you'd be looking at Deebo Samuel first, and then you're looking at Juwan Jennings second versus zone. If it's man coverage now, you're looking at George Kittle to Brandon Ayuk. That's it. These guys know when they're at the line of scrimmage, after they do a motion, if they are the primary or secondary read, or if they are decoys, and they run like they are the primary read every single time, because they know what that does for their teammate that actually is the primary read when they're not even in the read. So that's what San Francisco does a really good job of. And when you have Jimmy Garoppolo, that's played a lot more football than Trey, that's able to recognize it at the line of scrimmage a little bit faster than Trey, he's going to know where to go with the football before it's even in his hands. He knows exactly, hey, I'm looking at, you know, George Kittle on the seam, and I'm looking at BA on the comeback because it's man-to-man coverage right now. Or, hey, it's zone. So I'm looking at Deebo on the out route, and I'm looking at Juwan Jennings on whatever route he has because it's zone. He knows that before the ball even comes in his hand. And the next thing that San Francisco does really good is unlocking a defense. And how do they do that? They do that by always constantly sending somebody back. When you snap the ball, there's somebody coming back across the motion. And that is simply because you want to unlock those linebackers. You want to have those linebackers hesitate. You don't want those guys flowing downhill and just reading the key. Everything about this offense is based off the run game, and then with the run game comes the pass game, but it's all about unlocking the linebackers and getting them out of the gap control with the defensive line and not in sync.
So I listen to you talk about the impact of Jimmy Garoppolo, and it's clear. It's powerful. The Vegas line, the Vegas wise guys, they've spoken. His influence is powerful. Then why were they ready to let him go? Why was it to the point where during training camp, this is no joke, the guy that is the starting quarterback for the San Francisco 49ers on Sunday night, the guy that this week has been built up as the boogeyman, is a guy that during training camp came in to the facility, did his work, and then left while the rest of the team was out practicing.
Yeah.
He was invisible.
So two things, right? You just read an article about Cecil Lamb. He said, let Jimmy be Jimmy, right? And that is, let Jimmy Garoppolo throw it to you. Because even with what I just told you, Mike, the fact that it is so dialed up that you break the huddle where you know, hey, versus zone, here's your first read, here's your second, and that is it. Versus man, here's your first read, here's your second read, that is it. Yet Jimmy Garoppolo will still throw it to the defense a couple times a game.
Yep.
And give the defense an opportunity to steal a possession or two. That loses football games. That turns something that could be a dominant win where you skate past somebody easily and now you're resting your starters and you're able to play some of your backups and develop some of those guys to, hey, we got to go fight this thing out for 60 minutes. So that's one of the reasons, because Jimmy will still make a few mistakes and give the defense opportunities to steal a possession or two. But also the fact that Jimmy doesn't give you the ability to run from the quarterback position. When you have Trey Lance out there, and if Trey is able to get to the development of Jimmy, the way that they script things up and he's able to make those quick, decisive decisions behind the line of scrimmage, now you add in the fact that Trey Lance can run. Defenses don't account for quarterbacks to run the football. So now that football team is going to be firing on all cylinders because they have the passing game down pat. They have the running back games, and they could hand the ball to running backs, and they're going to be successful running the football. But now if a quarterback can run the football, you're a Super Bowl team, or you're competing for multiple Super Bowls over the next tenure of Trey Lance's career.
Coming up, we're going to have Andrew Mason join us, get his thoughts on the matchup. And I do want to ask you, based on that intimate knowledge you have being around the team last year, I want your honest opinion about what you thought about Trey Lance and whether or not he can be the guy there if and when he can ever get healthy. That's coming up. Orlando sitting in for Stink, who is off to do his work, his prep, as he's calling Washington and Philadelphia this weekend for Fox. Big O sitting in with me next.
It's a Bud Light Football Friday. Bud Light, official beer sponsor of the Denver Broncos.
You're going to need a bigger boat.
It's time for Schlereth and Evans' big story of the day.
Fine, it's just that you're so big.
Here's Schlereth and Evans with this morning's biggest story in Denver sports.
Big mistake. Big. Huge.
Well, he might be short in stature, but he is huge when it comes to all things. Talking about your Denver Broncos, he's our senior Bronco writer at DenverFan.com, and it is Andrew Mason. Mace, how you doing?
All right, fellas, how are you?
Well, it has been another one of those weeks, and we're looking forward to San Francisco, and instead of the idea being that it's a get-right game like the build-up to Houston was, now there's some serious trepidation out there when it comes to what's going to happen on Sunday night. What's your feeling?
I mean, I don't know why, but I think the Broncos are going to bounce back. Maybe it's because they have come so close in the red zone to having it right. Russell Wilson kind of kicked off everything on Wednesday when he was asked about it. Maybe it's the fact that the running game has worked and should be a strength. And then maybe it's the fact that Jimmy Garoppolo has that tendency to throw up a couple of passes that the 49ers would rather him not lob up there. That could be opportunities for takeaways, and it'll certainly help if Pat Surtain's out there, and he practiced yesterday, albeit on a limited basis. So, yeah, I actually think the Broncos find a way to get the dub in this one.
Okay, so you just talked about Pat Surtain, and yes, if he's out there, he could lock down a wide receiver, Mace, but how do you account for this San Francisco run game, and then all of a sudden, how do you also account for whoever is not on Pat Surtain. So if Juwan Jennings is out there, if Brandon Ayuk is on Darby, and these other guys, but that San Francisco run game as well.
Well, I mean, I think when you talk about the matchups, you know, Ronald Darby's off to a pretty good start to the season, so you're hoping he can carry it forward. And then the guy that you've got in that room, Kaywan Williams, who played for the 49ers, he's going to be able to probably give you a little bit of a heads up on guys matchup wise, so he can probably help everybody out in terms of sharing some tells from the other receivers. And then shutting down the run game, the interesting thing there is, even though the Niners don't do exactly the same thing the Broncos do in terms of outside scheme, it's similar enough to where the Broncos will have an advantage on some other teams. I mean, Kyle Shanahan was saying Wednesday that he kind of wishes that that style of offense, that style of running game in particular, wasn't so popular league-wide, wasn't spreading its wings throughout the league as it has in the last couple of years, because what you see now is a bunch of defenses around the league that are facing outside zone principles in training camp practice. And so they recognize how plays develop, and they don't necessarily bite on all the pre-snap motion and misdirection and all that. So I think that gives the Broncos a chance to contain the Niners run game. But the same is also true on the other side. The Niners see these sorts of things every day in practice, and so I think they can have some success containing the Broncos as well.
Our senior Bronco writer at DenverFan.com, Andrew Mason, joining us, Orlando Saint in for Stink. And the focus, the heat, the spotlight has certainly been directed at Nathaniel Hackett in a way in that Russell Wilson's sort of escaped that kind of scrutiny. What would you like to see more of from Russell Wilson specifically this week?
I'd like to see him take off and run when the alley and the opportunity is there. Not something frequent, but you'd like to see it more than three times over the course of two games. You'd like to see that be part of his game. Look, he's not going to get the 25, 30-yard explosive run in all likelihood anymore. That's not something that's part of his game here in year 10. But if he can get that quick 5 to 10 yards, keep the offense on schedule, keep defense honest, I think that's something that would open it up. Now, the one thing that Russ does have going for him is a history of success against the 49ers, and he has a good idea what they do defensively as well from his experience. So I think between seeing him run the ball a little bit more, and then he had the deep shot last week to Courtland Sutton. It was a nice play design to get him open, down the left sideline. He had the deep shot to Jerry Jeudy back in week one. They've drawn some pass interference penalties off of deep attempts. So just kind of keep working that into the game as well, because that's generally been successful for the Broncos so far this year when they've taken those downfield opportunities. They've been getting yards one way or the other.
Why has Russell Wilson not been as effective with his legs? Why is there only 5 yards? Is that a Nathaniel Hackett thing? Is that on this offensive line? Is that a Russell Wilson thing? And when the Broncos specifically get inside the 10-yard line, Mace, do they need to change their philosophy this week and be a little bit more under center, or are you subscribing to the fact that they are just that close, so you just keep on doing the reps and Russell will figure it out at some point?
Well, they are close, but I do feel they need to do more under center than they have. I mean, especially when you're talking about being within 1 or 2 yards of the goal line. I mean, I think, honestly, I kind of cringe when I see shotgun at the one. And the thing is, they have the personnel to be effective when they go into when they go three tight end with 13 personnel right down there at the goal line. They have the tight ends to be able to pull that off. And if you want to throw some misdirection at them, you can pass out of that as well from time to time. In fact, the Broncos had a nice pass play, an explosive pass play back in week one against Seattle. It wasn't in goal to go, but it was out of three tight end, 13 personnel. So that's what I want to see them do. I know that they've got the club in their bag. They just, for whatever reason, have chosen not to use it when they've been in third and goal and with extremely short yardage in that type of situation. So that I'd like to see them change and, you know, start imposing their will a little bit on an opponent when they get in the short yardage.
Mace, we're at the part of the show near the end of the show where we do predictions. What's yours for Sunday?
I've got the Broncos, and I've got them eking out a 20-17 win. I don't think this is going to be a game where you see one team run away, and I don't think this is going to be a game where you see an explosive offensive number, in part because you've got two very good defenses that know what that know what they're doing from a lot of work in practice against these types of schemes. But I think the Broncos will find a way to eke it out and get to 2-1.
All right, Mace. Thank you.
My pleasure, fellas. Have a great day.
Andrew Mason, our senior Bronco writer at DenverFan.com, joining us on the Johnson Auto Plaza hotline. I brought this up near the end of our last segment. You being with the 49ers last year in a coaching capacity, man, you got to see everything. You got to see the inner workings, the players, the culture, the way Kyle Shanahan works, and you got to watch Trey Lance. And I'm curious because the 49ers were prepared to go full bore with Trey Lance this season, even if it meant maybe taking a step back from being an NFC championship contender. Would it be? Will it ultimately be the right way to go? You'll answer that question. Plus, Russell Wilson's leadership style once again being brought into the spotlight this week. A prominent former NFL player weighs in, and we'll give you our predictions. All that coming up next.
It's a Bud Light Football Friday. Bud Light, official beer sponsor of the Denver Broncos. Here's Schlereth and Evans.
Orlando Franklin in for Stink, who had to leave a little early to go off and do his prep with Washington and Philadelphia, the game that he's going to be calling on Sunday. So Orlando Franklin is sitting in, and I've been really looking forward, and it's been fun this hour to kind of pick your brain because you spent a year with San Francisco, the 49ers last year in a coaching capacity, and really learned a lot. So I want Orlando Franklin, the radio guy, here sitting next to me, not Orlando Franklin, the guy that might still have, you know, a little bit of a link to where he was last year. What is your honest opinion about Trey Lance?
Well, you always get Orlando Franklin, the radio
okay,
guy.
Okay, that's what right? I want. Just make sure.
Here's the thing, right? The 49ers understand with Trey Lance that they weren't going to go out there and win a Super Bowl this year. But if you could put a great run game around this kid, you could limit the decisions he has to make, but also develop him and get him used to having some NFL runs, right, where he has to pull it down, where it's some quarterback design runs, but also develop him in his recognition of understanding what the defense is throwing at you, along with a great defense, with San Francisco will have a top five defense at the end of the year this season. It's teed up. Those guys returning and how D'Amico Ryans is doing and how hard those guys are coaching. It was, hey, let's see how far we could get in the playoffs. But we're a playoff team. We're going to make the playoffs with Trey Lance. With Jimmy Garoppolo, it's let's go try to win a Super Bowl.
Yeah.
Like, that's the thought process now with Jimmy being the starting quarterback right now. So Trey was going to struggle with recognizing defenses. Trey was going to struggle when you recognize if you can't recognize a defense, you don't know exactly who your primary and secondary read was. But the hope was that you play him long enough, he sees a good amount of football this year, that by the end of the season, you're no longer worrying about that.
You talked a lot about the things that San Francisco brings offensively. You touched on a little bit there, and I want to go into it a little bit more about what they do defensively. And Nathaniel Hackett talked earlier this week. He said they're simple on defense. They don't do a lot. They don't change things up. They're not out to out scheme you. They kind of line up and beat you.
Yep.
So what will the Broncos likely have a hard time doing against this defense? And where's the Achilles heel for this defense?
Yeah, so they don't do a lot defensively, but that front four, they are absolute monsters. And the scheme that they play with that front four is what sets them apart from 31 teams in the National Football League. All they're doing 90% of the time is rushing the front four. But how they do it is what affects the game. The defensive ends, they lied those guys up in wide nine technique. So if there's a tight end attached to the line of scrimmage, those guys are going to be about a yard outside of that tight end. And if there's not a tight end, those guys are going to be about a yard outside of that offensive tackle. And those defensive end, they're in those jet techniques, and it's all about getting upfield. Get upfield, you know, key the football. As soon as the ball is snapped, the heck with keying the player. I want you 3 yards up the field hard right now. Make it hard for that offensive tackle to get out there and cut you off. Don't allow that offensive tackle to create an edge, because that's what this run game for them is all about. It's creating edges, and when you do that, you have success. So the defensive ends, they're straight up the field, Mike. Now the defensive tackles, typically what you see a defensive tackle do is, hey, you got to put your hands on that guard. Now you got to extend that guard. And now you read, is it run or pass? Okay, if it's run, now you got to find a way to generate some more power and try to push that guard back and shed him to get off to the run. If it's pass, now you got to peek up, and now you got to get into your pass rush mode. That's what we see in the National Football League with defensive tackles across 31 teams in the National Football League. With the 49ers, their defensive tackles, it's all about ejecting these offensive linemen. So how these defensive ends are playing, the defensive tackles are doing the exact same thing. It's about getting 3 yards in the backfield. Because if you get 3 yards in the backfield, the philosophy of there and with the 49ers is that you disrupt all the run gap lanes. If you could put that offensive guard 3 yards in the backfield, that running back is not able to read it one gap at a time. That running back is not able to bend it back. If you are the backside defensive tackle, you put the guard 3 yards in the backfield. He has to go front side. You cut off running lanes like that. So this defense, it's all on this defensive line, and this defensive line stresses you out by putting the defensive ends out really, really wide, and now putting your tackles in compromising positions and not being able to generate power. But also you couple that with the defensive tackles, and it's all about getting up the field 3 yards, and that's when you react after you've been up the field 3 yards. Not at the line of scrimmage that you look if it's run or pass. You treat it like it's run every single time. And then when you're 3 yards in the backfield, is it pass or run at that point?
Okay. Get your hands full with that defensive front four. All the scrutiny this week towards Nathaniel Hackett, of course, put that aside. But there's also been, after the mic'd up Russell Wilson from Seattle game came to light, and especially Russ telling everybody to yell out pass or run, depending on what was happening. Got a lot of eye rolls from former NFL players. Rob Ninkovich on ESPN this morning's Get Up with Mike Greenberg talked about Russell Wilson's leadership style.
His own office and kind of beating to the beat of his own drum and doing things differently. Well, that doesn't really work in a team setting. You have to go through the grind of everything that everyone else is doing. That's why in the military, everyone, you know, you lose your hairdo, you go in, you lose your name, you go through boot camp and train, and that's just like training camp. You go in and you do the hard things together to where everyone looks at each other like, hey, I'm doing it for him. He's doing it for me. We have each other's back here. So if Russell can't be the leader, you paid him to be the leader and the best quarterback to lead your team, then this team isn't going to go anywhere, and they're not going to win, and they're not going to be what everyone expected them to be.
Your reaction to that?
I like that, because I truly believe that football is the ultimate team sport. Each player, each individual is relying on the other person. You have to want to do it for the people that are around you, especially with what you have to give to this game in order to play at a high level. And when you are a player that has been with the Broncos and you see a guy like Russell Wilson get special treatment or anything like that, you start questioning it. You know, I thought that was like, hey, this is a big no-no from the get-go. I get it. When Russ comes in, it's a superstar wife that comes in as well. But we've had that here with the Broncos. Not at the quarterback position, but Eric Decker and Jesse Decker, that was a superstar power couple, right? But Jesse Decker didn't get the front seat, and Jesse Decker didn't get the access to the training room, and Jesse Decker didn't get the parking space that's right there and more access than other people's wives or anything like that. And guys look at things like that, especially when you have to grind and protect somebody.
Okay, but especially these days, with the emphasis and the importance that's placed on the quarterback, I would think it only takes you 5 minutes in the NFL to understand the rules are going to be different. And that it doesn't take long to understand it, and that once you understand it, no big deal. Yeah, there's 53 of us, but there is one guy who is treated differently. That's just the way it is.
So,
and it doesn't really bother people.
I go back to a guy like Peyton Manning, right? And I just watch how he operated, watch how he approached the game each and every day. We all knew that Peyton would come in on Tuesdays. He had to come in on Tuesdays because he'd show up on a Wednesday morning and all of a sudden all the code words were changed. So we knew that he was game planning, but with the coaches while everybody else were taking the day off. But he still acted as regular as possible with everything that he did. So when we had a day where guys are banged up or things like that, we would go to Peyton and say, hey, you know, we want to go a hat day right here. And Peyton would be like, hey, I'll try to get it done, but I can just tell you right now, Foxy's thinking this, right? And there was days where John Fox, and I think that this is the best example that I could give. One day we all showed up after about a 6-game winning streak, and we sat there and we looked at Peyton and we said, man, we're banged up. Like, we want to go hats. It says that we're in full pads. And Peyton was like, yeah, you know what? Let's just do hats. And it was a day that it was snowing here in Colorado, Mike. And we at this point, the facility, UC Health facility, the indoor facility, that facility was not up and running. So we used to have to get in these buses and drive about a mile down the street to the bubble by Family Sports. Right across from Family Sports. That's where we would practice inside that bubble. We all got on this bus thinking that, hey, Peyton said, hey, we could do hats. So we all got in this bus without shoulder pads, without helmets and hats. And John Fox came on the bus, saw what everybody was wearing, and he said, no, get in that locker room, go put on your guys' shoulder pads, go put on your guys' helmets. And I think that was like a real surreal moment, because you have Peyton that you're thinking, like, man, this is Peyton. He's saying, yeah, let's go do this as well. But the head coach says, no, I'm not doing that. If Nathaniel Hackett, if that was Russell Wilson and Nathaniel Hackett, Nathaniel Hackett's going, okay, let's do hats.
Right.
And you're further invalidating that narrative of this guy gets special treatment, where John Fox just said, absolutely
so
not.
So in many respects, Fox's the respect level, or just the idea that this is the guy in charge, went up that day,
but also, like, how we viewed Peyton went up that day as well, because it was like he's fighting.
At least he fought for us. Yeah.
And he's in the same boat as us, and he's being treated just like us.
Right.
And that was the
big thing. I see what you're going.
Yes, a quarterback is going to be treated differently. They only get hit 17 games a year.
Yeah.
Yes, a quarterback is going to be treated differently. They're the face of the organization. We understand those things, but there's a way not to go overboard with it.
All right, couple things we got to get done here. It's time for your injury report presented by Zoom Care. And it is a long list. You have Jerry Jeudy, who did not practice yesterday. You had Randy Gregory, Dalton Risner, Caden Stearns, K'Wan Williams, all went full. But Tyree Cleveland, Jonathan. No. There's too many of them, Fever, so hold on. We got to do this all at once. Jonathan Cooper, KJ Hamler, Josie Jewell, Draymond Jones, DJ Jones, Quinn Miners, Mike Purcell, Pat Surtain, Billy Turner, all
limited.
Thank you.
Limited.
A lot of limiteds out there. We don't need to go through all of them, but a lot of limiteds. They are your injury report presented by Zoom Care. Visit zoomcare.com to learn more about their Beyond Better urgent and primary health care clinics in Denver and Boulder today. Finally, our Broncos pick. It's presented by King Soopers, official grocer of the Denver Broncos. What do you got?
I got the Broncos shocking the world 24-3. 24-23. 24-23. Sorry.
Okay.
Sorry.
24-23.
I got the Broncos pulling it out, figuring it out, you know. One of those last, you know, minute B-Mac kicks and it all working together. It's the B-Mac gets his way and Nathaniel Hackett gets his way and Russell Wilson throws a couple touchdowns and we lean heavily on the run game and this defense just comes out and absolutely shows that they're not going to let George Kittle affect what's going on today.
Well, I'm going to go with the reverse jinx. I can't help but notice what the Vegas wise guys, that was significant, the way the line moved, and also just the idea that in San Francisco now with Jimmy Garoppolo at the helm, you got a team that is very comfortable in who and what they are now. And that goes up against a Broncos team that is still, there's just such a feeling of chaos and they're trying to work it out and it's all new. And I just have a hard time after what I saw last Sunday thinking that the Broncos are suddenly going to become this efficient streamlined unit in 1 week. I think they'll eventually get there, but not yet. So I've got the 49ers. Hope I'm wrong. 49ers 23, Broncos 17. Well, I'll be back with DMAC on Sunday, right up until kickoff as part of our fan football pregame show live from Mile High Station. Orlando, thank you so much for sitting in for Stank.
Yeah, thanks
but
for
you don't
me.
Go anywhere because you're part of the Players Club coming up next.
Hey, it's Mike Evans. Siltahar Motors understands sometimes bad things happen to good people. That includes bankruptcy. If that is you, you can still purchase a car at Siltahar with zero money down in almost all cases. This is a program they've been doing for 25 years. The dealership itself is almost 60. Family-owned business that is proud of their reputation and proud to be a huge part of the Broomfield community. If you file bankruptcy, Siltahar Motors can help. Zero down and no payments for 45 days in almost all cases. Contact Team Zero Down at 720-446-9222 or online at sthmotors.com.